This is the November 25 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Merrill Crowley of First Choice Commodities from Watseka, Illinois. Tom Guinan of Landis Cooperative out of Ames, Iowa. And Chip Nelliger of Blue Reef AgriMarketing out of Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. A quick reminder that coming up on Tuesday of next week is the first in the IFAS, the Illinois Farm Economics Summit Series. I'll be moderating five of these. They're just 1 hour long. It's a free webinar series. Usually we're on the road each and every year, but of course this one is being done virtually. You can sign up for the day right now if you'd like at willag.org or go to farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Scott Irwin and Gary Schnitke, along with Mr. Paulson, Mr. Kappas, and Mr. Sherrick will be with us. Each of those run 1 hour with a Q&A after the presentation, starting at 11 o'clock on Tuesday, December the 1st, and following up Friday, Tuesday, Friday, and then Tuesday, December the 15th. Again, sign up today, right now, for the University of Illinois, Illinois Farm Economics Summits, willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Now let's get started with our list of questions that we might want to take up for the day, or at least topics. I think, Matt Bennett, I'll start with you at agmarket.net. What's on your mind?
List of items to talk about. I just wondering what everyone, how everyone kind of feels about this, this South American weather. I know that weather's obviously something that can change on a dime. Certainly going to be one of my top two topics. I don't want to take the other glaring one out there. So the other thing I guess I'll just ask everyone, to weigh in on is whether they think these carryouts on corn and soybeans are going to narrow up a little bit and maybe get an idea of where they think they may land.
Merrill Crowley from First Choice Commodities, your list?
I thought I'd go through the main fundamentals driving the market and what the status is of those.
How about you, Tom Guinan?
I would say a couple of things on my list. The failure to take out $12 on January soybeans has been kind of key here the end of this week, and then just the overarching supply and demand figures for veg oils.
Chip Nelliger, anything to add?
Well, I think that's a pretty good list. I think just to tie that all up, what's a guy to do here, going into the end of the year, up near, 4-plus-year highs in beans and multi-year highs in corn? What do we do? What do we make sense of all this? And what are we supposed to be doing as far as managing risk? Because there's a lot of it going into the end of this year and the start of a new year.
You probably have all realized that we have a special guest with us by now. His name is Tom Guinan, and he's with Landis Cooperative out of Ames, Iowa. Tom, I want to thank you and appreciate you being with us here on Commodity Week. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself and then maybe something about the cooperative?
Certainly, Todd. I spent a little over 20 years with Cargill in various merchandising roles, buying soybeans for a soybean processing plant, buying corn for a corn processing plant, and then selling feed ingredients for a number of years as well. I've been with Landis for about 4 years. Landis is a merged entity a little over 4 years ago between a couple of very large co-ops in the state of Iowa. The name Land Us was a created name standing for the people and the ground, so land and us, Landis. We cover about 50-some different grain elevators in the state of Iowa. We can load rail on all 7 major rail lines in Iowa, and we do a lot of trucking in the state of Iowa into the feed mills and ethanol plants, and have a pretty big presence here in the central part of Iowa.
And you also have a soybean processing facility?
We do. We also process soybeans in our Ralston crush plant, and that's been something that has gone fairly well for several years, and this year has been a really good year as well.
Matt Bennett, do you have a question for Tom?
Yeah, Tom, obviously you're in an area that was affected by the derecho event here this summer, in some of your locations probably much more so than others. But, going into harvest, with the damage assessment that you and your folks with the co-op did, How would you say you came out? Do you think that you guys handled as much corn as what you thought you might, even after seeing that damage, or did you come up a little shy yet from what your estimates might have been?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, and it really kind of depends. If you get up as far north as our northern border, we're right on the border with Minnesota. Those guys up there had a phenomenal crop, bigger than we would have guessed, both corn and soybeans. And if you get down in here to this derecho area and this droughted area, the yields were significantly less than we thought, but significantly off from normal, but also lower than we expected as we went into harvest. The yields just weren't there.
Just offhand, the area covered by the cooperative, based on your map on the website, Tom, looks like you cover a large part of the northwest corner of Iowa, meaning the whole northwest quadrant, maybe a third of the southwest quadrant, just below that. And then you have a smattering of elevators that are in the northeast quadrant. Derecho, I think, just slightly below where most of your facilities are. And I did read a note on the website that you didn't suffer any damage or very little damage at the facilities as well. But I'm really interested in that northwestern and southwestern quadrant. That's the largest production area by crop reporting district, or at least part of it is, in Iowa. How did the drought impact that crop?
Correct. That southwest area was really suffering from that, dryness, drought, as we got into July. And it just seemed to explode once we hit that derecho date of August 10th. It kept going north and a little bit further east. So our southwestern region, if you will, was off significantly, and then the northwest was hurt as well. That dryness really extended up into that northwest area as well, and kind of cut back the yield quite a bit there.
Was it a late season problem? Because I went through there at the very end of July, and that crop, while it had been hurt by dry weather, still looked really good at that point.
Yeah, and the vast majority of our territory, it looked really good until August 10th, but there were, even mid-July, we were hearing from our agronomists out in that southwest part of Iowa saying, this crop's not as good as it looks from the road. You guys need to get out here and get into the field and look at this, and it's getting hurt because of this dryness. We suffered, for 4 or 5 weeks without rain during that time frame.
Merrill Crowley, do you have a question for Tom?
Yes. I was on the website. You had a article, Moneyball and Grain Marketing, was that yours?
That was, yes.
I think it's a good time if we kind of just hit the highlights of that, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, I think my point from that article was, if you've watched the movie Moneyball, and I watched it years ago, and I just remember it as being a good story. You know, the Oakland A's had this winning streak of 20 games. They did better than they've done in a long time. But a lot of it was because of the way they changed their approach to the way they manage that team. And it really took a long time for the players to buy in. The first part of that year didn't go very well. And they needed to really get them to stop thinking everything they've been taught about how to play baseball. One point in there was a player telling the general manager, but you pay me to steal second base. He said, no, I pay you to get on base, not get thrown out at second base. So quit trying to steal, just get on base. That's our whole game plan. Get a base hit. And so I tried to liken that to grain marketing. I think farmers need to change a little bit of the way they approach grain marketing today. I have been just saying, I think farmers are really good at growing grain for a reason, and I think they're really bad at marketing grain for a reason. They like growing grain, and they hate marketing grain. So when they get a free moment, they spend their time learning how to grow more grain. They need to change up their organization, get somebody else involved in that organization and give them that responsibility to market grain, and then get out of their way and let them do their job. You go learn about fertility and seeds and hybrids and chemicals and machinery, and let that person on your team market grain and let them do it and learn about it.
By the way, Moneyball showed up on Netflix earlier in the year because Billy Bean, the Oakland A's manager, finally retired from that organization and just left. So it popped up. It's a great movie. I watched it earlier in the year for the first time. You can always go back, I'm sure, if you have Netflix and search it out. Chip Nellinger at Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, one final question for Tom before we move on to the rest of you folks.
Yeah, I'd switch it to the demand side. Just wondering, obviously we talked about supply issues, some of the wind damage, drought areas, some areas to the north being really good as far as yields. But are you picking up anything, you know, with some major change from the last couple of years as far as the demand side of the equation? You guys handle a lot of logistics and demand side, you know, with your crush plants and all of that. So just wondering if you could comment on that, what you see there in the central part of Iowa as far as the potential demand changes compared to a couple of years ago.
Well, I don't really think the demand is going to change that much unless we get into some, you know, delayed COVID situation where we're going through that again this spring and we're shutting down some ethanol plants. But we've got good demand in the state of Iowa. And I think the key to this year is because this supply has been cut back, those ethanol plants and those feed mills are going to have to work just a little bit harder. Their basis is going to have to stay a little bit stronger to convince that corn not to leave the state of Iowa. We ship a lot of grain by rail in a typical year. I think that'll be off quite a bit because these ethanol plants will be hungry for corn and keeping it in front of them, assuming they can keep their margins profitable.
I think I will follow up with you, Tom, and then maybe, Matt, you can answer this. This came from you as a question, Matt. Will the carryouts, Tom, for corn and soybeans need to tighten up? And I was just thinking about ethanol usage in the state of Iowa, as you just discussed.
We do have some ability to tighten up that carryout, especially on corn. If and as long as China keeps buying a little corn or corn products, whether that's ethanol or corn, either way, I think they're going to continue to keep a little pressure on the corn market. I'm really kind of anxious about how much tighter we can get the soybean carryout. You know, we're at 100 million now. How much lower can that go from there? Kind of depends on what we talked about earlier with South American weather and what their production will be. I think we're kind of on that precipice of, you know, which way do we go from here? But I am concerned about, if we do start to put a number on there that's less than 100 million, that's going to really change the dynamics of this market.
Matt, are you concerned that we could tighten things up even more for both corn and particularly for soybeans as well?
Well, you know, we printed a 190 there this month in November, and I know a lot of people have been floating around that 100, you know, that Tom mentioned. You know, somewhere in that ballpark, we have to remember that the function of the market, you know, obviously is to scare away some demand with higher prices. We saw a little bit of that happening this week with, you know, some crushers in China backing out of a few cargoes. I guess I would caution people to get too excited because many times we've seen those cancellations be essentially a ploy to buy beans a little cheaper. So I guess I'm not losing a lot of sleep there. But I do think you're going to get tighter from 190 for sure. Whether you can get into that sub 100 range, I think it's just probably not going to happen just due to the fact that, you know, we're going to end up rationing some of that demand. On corn, currently, I think that we're, you know, we're definitely tighter than a 1.7. You know, how much, I think, is the key. I was definitely interested to hear everyone else. My team's actually a little bit closer to 1.5 than what we are, 1.7. And so at this stage of the game, I think that you can see exports continue to be adjusted higher. Cattle on feed, certainly, you know, placements were pretty friendly cattle. But as far as on feed, you know, we've got a lot of cattle on feed. And there's no doubt that I think your feed number could actually grow just a shade. So I think moving forward, you could probably see, you know, a 1.5 or even below, depending on how these Chinese purchases go.
Merrill Crowley, soybeans did not manage to take out $12, at least through the end of the trading day on Wednesday. How concerning is that for you?
At this point, not really that concerning. They've been running hot and heavy for quite some time since August. And, I mean, it's you don't want to go to sleep on this. It could tighten up 2013, 2014. Our stocks use went to 2.6%. We had 150 carryout at the end of that year. So if that occurs, they're going to take that 12 out pretty quick. Once you hit 13, there isn't a lot of time spent between 13 and 14. So that's on the bullish side. Now, the thing that has me more concerned at this point is looking at the CIF values. They're about 30 cents cheaper than they were. That's concerning. And then the talk we have here in the last couple of days of some of the Chinese crushers washing out of their contracts because they failed to hedge on the board, and now these prices are hurting them, that crush margins have now gotten negative over there for soybean crush.
Chip Nellinger, I know you've been watching that last issue some. How much of a concern might that be that the Chinese will step away from purchases they've already made?
Yeah, you know, I think we always face that. That's nothing new that, you know, is earth-shattering to this market. Oftentimes, they'll wash out, rebuy, wash out two or three times before the vessel, you know, hits mainland China. So I don't think that's a huge issue. I just tail on with what Merrill mentioned. You know, there are some targets up here, some Fibonacci extensions just over $12, you know, actually 1203 and three quarters on one that I've been watching. Is $12 close enough to that? It might be. We're really overheated to the upside as far as overbought. But the thing I want to point out is if you just take a look at front month continuation bean chart, put it on a weekly or monthly time frame. We've only been up in this area, you know, three or four times in the past. And every time we have been up this level, you have ended up seeing massive swings and increases in volatility. I'm talking about, you know, dollar and a half breaks followed by $2-$2.50 rallies back into new highs. So I think that's something to probably keep on the radar screen and be mentally prepared for our massive swings. We haven't really seen much of a correction, 60-cent correction back in mid-October, but that's pretty minor in the scheme of things. I think the volatility is going to increase. Maybe $12 for the time being is enough, and we put a bigger correction in, but I don't know that the highs are in, and I think this volatility is going to greatly increase, and we just really have to be mentally prepared for that because we haven't seen it yet. We haven't seen it for a long, long time.
Chip, those kinds of swings don't sound like they would be fundamentally driven, or at least that large, that fast. How much are you paying attention to the technical side of the marketplace in that case?
Yeah, you know, I think you have to on one hand, but on the other hand, we're smack dab in the middle of a full-blown weather market. And when you're in weather markets, you can kind of throw technicals out the window. In fact, that's part of the reason, you know, you see these massive swings is changes in forecasts, surprise rains that are supposed to materialize and don't. So to a certain extent, in a weather market, you have to a little bit throw technicals out. But, you know, they certainly matter. I think one level I'm watching here would be the low from earlier this week in January beans, 1161 and three quarters. Also coincides with a high from a couple weeks ago. If you take that out, you probably are in set for a deeper break that could maybe even take you back towards the 1050 level. So yes, technicals definitely matter. I don't really like the fact we closed lower today, couldn't take those highs out. I think Friday morning could be a pretty wild volatility based on what the weather forecast says, you know, overnight, Thursday and early morning Friday.
Matt Bennett, do you think the Chinese will continue to buy, and by buy I mean any agricultural products from the United States, and what particularly are you watching?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're going to continue to buy. I mean, to me, whenever you look at the fact that they, you know, that they sold 50 million metric ton of, you know, corn out of their reserves this this past year. I mean, basically every auction they sold completely out, other than one. You know, you got to ask yourself. You know, obviously they're saying that they have a normal size crop. There's a lot of speculation that's not the case. But even with a normal size crop, the last several years they've been running a 20 to 25 million metric ton deficit. So from a national security standpoint, they've always wanted to keep a fair amount of corn on hand. So you would think that, you know, the FAS number of 22 million metric tons probably going to be that might not even be right. You know, they may need more that if they're going to end up anywhere near where they were coming into this year. I'm not saying that's what they want, but one would have to think that that's got to be something going through their head. So I think that they're going to certainly be buying corn. Soybeans is definitely going to be a wild card. I mean, what's the South American weather going to look like? You know, are we going to see a fairly strong La Nina continue to, you know, be an adverse impact as far as how their weather is concerned in both Brazil and Argentina? If it is, you know, and we actually see a 5% drop. I mean, a 5% drop in Brazil, I believe I saw today, was around 240 million bushels. So, you know, it would certainly be a pretty big impact. So you got to keep a pretty close eye there. I think that they'll continue to buy U.S. beans until you see Brazilian beans in mass quantity available, which is probably going to be no earlier than the end of February. So it's going to be very important to watch the weather moving forward. But, yeah, I do think that they're going to continue to buy U.S. products, and I think corn and beans would be at the top of the list.
Tom, did I see that in your career you worked for Cargill in the export portion of their facilities?
Yeah, I worked in a corn milling plant and company, or part of the business, where we exported some different products, corn gluten meal and corn gluten pellets.
I'm wondering if that international side has given you any contacts that give you a better insight into what China might be looking to purchase over the next few months.
No, not really. You know, it just seems like every time I think about China and everything that they do, I'm kind of with what the other folks were saying, that we see these cancellations and rebookings back and forth until they seem to get the price they're after. And I've never quite been able to get anybody to really explain to me how that works, or why it works that way, or why we allow it. But that's what happens in that market.
Merrill Crowley, what are your technical indicators telling you you should do it this time?
Be patient right now. If we break in that 1160, like Chip was talking about in beans, that would bring up some big concerns for me. The corn would be right around 420. There's good support on March corn, so I wouldn't want to really break that at this point in time. The other side of the coin is if you don't have your sales on, this would be a good place to start some new crop sales. There's some question, especially in the corn market. The old adage is sell a short crop, and you say, well, this is the third or fourth largest crop that we've had. But the thing is we've come from somewhere in the 180s down to 154, I believe. And that's quite a drop, and it almost copies a short crop. If you're talking about a short crop, you would be selling early. And again, just like Chip said, technicals kind of get bent out of shape when you're looking at a weather market, and that's definitely what we're in with South America. The last weather market you saw in South America was in 13-14, which again was the time when we had the tight stocks. Now that rally actually came, started in January and worked its way up into April and May with a triple top. Our timing of our rallies are almost similar from when we started our August rally in beans to the swing that we're having now from August to current. So, you know, that leads me to believe the beans are ready for some sort of a solid retracement. And then that's just going to, how far does that retrace? Well, do they get the rains down in South America? You know, last year, Brazil had their seventh driest season and still had really good crops. So it really sometimes doesn't depend on whether or not they have dryness. It's how opportune are the rains. And so far, we've been catching rains to minimize the weather problem there to about 25% of Brazil and about 50% of Argentina.
Matt Bennett, this week, we were told that about 85% of the soybeans have been marketed by farmers, I believe, across the United States. That checked out, of course, with some of the facilities we talk with. We'll check with Tom in a moment to see how far along he thinks the cooperative is in its purchases there. I'm wondering if there's anything that producers need to do for soybeans on that last 15% as you think about going forward, or whether they need to think about next year for soybeans and corn, either one.
I don't know where to start there, Todd, but I think I'll start here. As far as soybeans are concerned, you know, whenever you're trading this close to $12 after several years of essentially being in the doldrums and struggling to, you know, really see a whole lot above $10 here for the last couple, 3 years, I guess in my opinion, a person has to take a strong look at going ahead and locking in this last portion. Now, I've heard a lot of folks say, I still want to stay in some sort of ownership, and I understand that. There's ways you can do it without, basically leaving your head on the chopping block. And so I think that a limited risk position, if you want to participate, I certainly understand, but there's nothing wrong with selling $12 beans. I mean, a lot of the producers that all of us talk to had a really good bean crop. There's no question that it was a solid bean crop, maybe not best ever, but an awfully good bean crop. As far as new crop goes, it's pretty tough for me to ignore, 10.50 plus soybeans or $4.10 corn. I mean, earlier today, I believe, on Wednesday, we were trading at 4.13 and a half. To me, 4.15 was another area that we were just kind of keeping an eye on. I'm not saying we're not going to go up from there, but locking in better sales levels than what we've seen for a while heading into the game makes sense. And one more way to look at it, I guess, if you're okay with 10.50 beans or if you're okay with 4.10 corn, for your spring insurance price averages, why not at least head some of this risk off? Because those levels for most producers are going to ensure that they're going to have a good year, at least a profitable year at normal yields. So a little bit of a hedging of risk standpoint, in my opinion, at this stage of the game makes pretty good sense.
Tom Guinan, usually we think of the Western Corn Belt, and this pans out, and actually the data as well, as having more on-farm storage than the eastern side of the Corn Belt. Have producers used it this year, or have they been taking advantage of prices and marketing?
Well, I do believe that most folks filled their farm storage. We've been trying to convince them to, get some sales on for this old crop. Look at the deferred slots, and soybeans, we do have an inverse if you get past February, but get some things sold, even if it's just the core of your bins, get something going in January, put some sales on the book so you can start hauling in when you want to. Don't just sit and wait. And I agree with Matt. I think it's a time to start looking at, even if it's 5 bushel an acre, get something sold on that corn and don't pass up some opportunity to sell some soybeans at these levels for new crop.
Are you 85% along in purchases for soybeans for this year or not?
I think we're a little behind that. We certainly had a lot of folks sell some beans at harvest just because they had rallied so much and they were using that for their cash flow and holding on to their corn. But I do believe there's quite a few people just kind of hanging on, waiting to see if we can bust through that $12 level on the board. And if we can get something in, mid-Iowa where we're up above $11.50 for cash. So there's still some guys out there that are speculating on this thing and thinking it's going to go higher. And, they're reading some of the same things I'm reading where folks are saying we could be going to 14 and above. And I just keep thinking, if that were the case, I think we'd already, be there. We're going to have some kind of significant weather change somewhere to push us much higher from here.
Let's begin to wrap up our program now. Chip Nellinger at Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. I think I'll look for a final word from you.
Yeah, final word. I think it's been a very good review of the risks out there. We haven't even talked about, the COVID aspect of potential shutdowns, into the end of the year, first part of the new year. A tremendous amount of risk out there. We're at levels that make sense. We're tech, basically at levels where it makes sense. Do we need to take that risk of a surprise weather forecast change in Brazil and a bunch of rain that wasn't expected? If they're closer to a 133, 134 size crop on the beans, then we're way overdone here. If they're going to be closer to, 124, low 120s, then we might have some upside. But there's lower risk ways to own this on paper. And $12 or nearly $12 is a tremendous level. Corn up here, at 4 or north of 4 in a lot of areas in the cash market. Same type scenario here. And I think that a lot of times we get a little bit too bulled up at times, just a human nature part of us. And I'm not saying beans can't end up at $15 and corn at $4.75 to $5. That's very realistic. That's possible. But taking that risk with a bunch of unpriced inventory is really maybe not the prudent thing to do going forward.
Merrill Crowley from First Choice Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois. Your final word?
Well, I was just thinking as you're talking about with Tom and with Chip, You know, if you had a 134 million metric ton crop there in South America, 67 million would be half. 35 is about what China has bought from us now. So they've already bought 102 million metric ton. And I'm not sure how much more they're going to need to buy, actually. I think we need to keep our eye on the three main items that could affect us: weather, China demand, and politics. And I had to laugh the other day when I was talking to a customer. He said, producers don't want to sell as they are convinced there are higher prices to come, yet they don't want to buy as they believe the prices are too high.
Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net in Windsor, your final word.
Yeah, I just think that we got a lot to be thankful for here this year. I mean, this rally has been something something that we haven't experienced for quite some time. $3 plus on soybeans and well over a dollar on corn. It's just been a lot of fun to experience. But a producer needs to pay attention. Anytime that you see this sort of rally and this sort of profit on the table, your risk has increased substantially. Managing some of that risk makes a heck of a lot of sense. You know, I know that it's just as hard to sell higher priced commodities as what it is lower priced commodities. But if we look at it from a business sense, from a dollars and cents standpoint, look at it in black and white, I think it's pretty easy to make some decisions, take some risk off the table with the prices we're looking at today.
And finally, Tom Guinan of Landis Cooperative out of Ames, Iowa.
Yeah, I would agree with the rest of the folks. You know, taking a few chips off the table is never a bad thing to do. If you get all of your old crop sold up, then there's still going to be some opportunity in new crop if we do see some of these rallies. The other thing I'd really help people keep an eye on is what's going on with soybean oil. You know, we're up, you know, 5-6 cents, which might not sound like a lot, but put that in the context of how much that is per ton, and that soybean oil has really come up a lot here in the last 30 days. And I think it's because of all these other veg oils issues.
Is there a shortage?
Well, Malaysian palm oil is where we have a shortage in supply, and then we're seeing some issues with canola oil as well. So it's kind of pushing back into that soybean oil, you know, a lot more people looking for, you know, cooking at home and using oil. So a little more demand than normal. And we're kind of talking about a food versus fuel demand or debate, I should say, in that space.
By the way, if you'd like to learn more from Tom Guinan on a regular basis, you can do that in a couple of ways. Look him up at landiscooperative.com or search some of your favorite podcast applications for Bull Bear Banter. That's Bull Bear Banter. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net, Merrill Crowley of First Choice Commodities, Tom Guinan from Landis Cooperative, and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.